Packet Pushers.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Packet Protector, a new podcast at the intersection of security and networking from the Packet Pushers. I'm JJ, and as always, here with Drew Conry Murray to bring you a hot topic and some of the latest interesting InfoSec news. Today, we're also talking about Cloud Security Lab a Week, or Cloud SLAW, which is a free training course from our guest, Rich Mogul, a longtime friend of mine. So we'll introduce you to Rich here in a second. But first, let's talk about a couple of the news items, because Drew, this whole United Healthcare ransomware attack is still just a giant snowball of crap that's unraveling in front of our face. What have you seen about that?
Yeah. So they put out a release saying that they're making progress in restoring services after probably everybody knows about the cyber attack that crippled a subsidiary. And that subsidiary is essentially in the middle of processing healthcare transactions, and it disrupted insurance payments to doctors, to hospitals, to pharmacies. United Healthcare says it's paid more than $2 billion to healthcare providers to sort of get them over the hump while they get systems back online. I guess there are also reports emerging that United Healthcare may have paid a ransom, although they aren't confirming this.
So I'm also curious on Rich. So one of the things you'll learn about Rich in a second is that he is a volunteer paramedic.
No. I'm a paid paramedic.
You're a paid paramedic.
Usually I get paid. Sometimes I volunteer.
Volunteer Mountain Rescue. Is that it?
In my past, yeah.
Okay. I love bringing the whole people into the conversation because there's always something interesting. But you do get to see things feet on the street at a level that we don't. But yeah, I think what's interesting about this one, so this really started hitting the ground right out a month ago, end of February. Stuff kind of unfolded quickly and spread quickly. And basically, you know, all of insurance processing across the U.S. was impacted, and something to the tune of like one out of every three Americans, which is a huge number, third of our population is impacted by this. The funny part, I think, is supposedly they were watching these Bitcoin wallets that are tied to the Black Cat Alpha V hacking group. So it looks like somebody paid a whopping $22 million ransom, but then according to Chatter, the hacking affiliates, that did not get shared with the affiliate that actually breached the infrastructure. So there's a lot to untangle here. I think there's going to be a lot unfolding. Rich, what do you think about this?
For me, two things. One is it's kind of fascinating the impacts on the healthcare system that we're seeing. And this is continuing and ongoing in multiple areas. Healthcare is one of the biggest targets for ransomware right now for some really obvious reasons. And as somebody who is, you know, worked as a healthcare clinician myself and had to work with IT systems, but also it's like my wife used to work healthcare IT. My mom was a nurse. Like I was raised in the healthcare system. I can guarantee you that they have and continue to dramatically underinvest. And it's a very regional based, even with the big national. So that really creates a worst case scenario. Super sensitive data, underinvestment in security, that combination of all that sensitive data makes it a ripe target. This one was interesting because everybody connects into them because they're one of the intermediaries within the system for approvals and processing. And so that really shows a lot of the fragility of the interconnectedness of the healthcare system and lack of compartmentalization in some cases, which is, it's a problem. Some of these larger systems, if they go down, they can really take down a wide swath of providers and our ability to get healthcare. And I've even seen it where the reliance on IT can completely break a hospital, like your ability to get meds or do anything. And so this was more consumer focused, but real similar. At the same time, what's very interesting is that supposedly United Healthcare is going around and buying some of the financially distressed providers that were not able to keep their operations running because they were unable to have their claims and things processed.
Oh.
So they just take this opportunity to consolidate even further. And part of the issue of this having such a huge impact is there was so much consolidation in the payment processing area that one target could take out a third, essentially, of our capacity to process healthcare payments.
Yeah, so interesting. I don't have a whole lot of facts on that, but I do know within healthcare, some people within the community were talking about that, like on Reddit and stuff, about United swooping in, buying up some of these scenarios. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Too soon for that.
Yeah.
That is not a good look. It sounds like there could be more. What I mean by that is it sounds like from the story, the way they're covering it now, the affiliate group who kind of got screwed in the ransomware payment, if that's how this went down, right? The main group just pretended to be taken down by the FBI. They copied and pasted a prior takedown notice on their website and then ran away. But it sounds like the group that actually infiltrated the environment has additional records from other partner organizations. And so I'm a little concerned that this is going to continue unboxing itself in a bigger way than just, it's not going to trail off into nothingness. I think it might bloom back up into something pretty significant if additional partners in this space that were not originally targeted in the first time get targeted, maybe in data extortion, right? Leak extortion to force a payment another way since they were screwed out of the first payment.
Yeah. And, you know, what's also interesting, let's go back to the root cause of all of this that has been released, it looks like, and it was the Screen Connect vulnerability. So a known vulnerability, public-facing resources, possibly in the cloud and on-premise that were compromised and then used for the spread of traditional malware-based ransomware as opposed to cloud-based ransomware. So
eating the veggies, not eating the veggies. Well, along the other healthcare kind of news, I know a lot of people in security are not fans of the various genetic testing sites because they don't want their DNA spread around. But a lot of us have used this service. And the 23andMe thing is also still unfolding a little bit, trailing off. But they had a, you know, password spraying, brute force attacks. Many, 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 many accounts were compromised and a lot of data was lost. And at first, it was kind of like, okay, well, I think a lot of people went, oh, no, 23andMe got hacked. And then the truth was, okay, well, basically people had scraped credentials and then they were just brute forcing passwords from users not really following good password hygiene, which is, you know, that's our fault as a consumer. But then on the swing side of this, the sheer volume of those attacks and those password sprays was so large that I think any reasonable person would expect the service provider, 23andMe, to recognize that and be able to monitor and alert on that. And I mean, Rich, obviously you work a lot in, you know, cloud applications and security. This to me, as somebody who doesn't work in that space, seems like a no-brainer of why weren't you monitoring and alerting on that? Should we have expected more?
I mean, to some degree, there was no options for MFA and for very sensitive data. And there were no options to better secure your account. And some of the data leaks were when people were genetic relatives. So my data, for example, I don't know if it was compromised. Probably not because I didn't use that feature a lot. But somebody who was compromised and can gain access to a subset of my data. So it's not like the raw DNA results were being pulled out here. But there is definitely sensitive information about who I was that could have been pulled out. I do think better monitoring alerting, as you said, is something at the time they didn't have MFA that's been enforced now. I'm a 23andMe user. I have a bio background. I mean, we talked about healthcare. I studied molecular biology in college, and that was the warring parts of me, the privacy versus the, you know, the benefits and advancement of science that can be done here. And so I did use it. The crisis communications from them were just absolutely horrific around all this and how they communicated to customers and the press and the media and everyone else. It was very clear that there's a room to grow there for them. So look, they've added additional security that could probably deal with this. These kinds of credential stuffings are huge problems across a lot of these services. The answer, I don't think, is better monitoring. The answer is we have to be better about authentication, except that becomes burdensome for consumers. Although I think, you know, as much as we don't like SMS authentication, MFA for our security-focused things, I would never want to do that for a financial institution. For all of these other services, I think, and totally fine and consumer-friendly.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be widespread SIM swapping attacks for a population of, you know, millions of individual users for that type of data. The ROI is just not there.
How much blame do you think the end user consumer deserves here for maybe using sort of weak username password combos?
I'm not going to blame users at all for that because we have built up a system. If we look at, you know, just culture kind of concepts, we have built a system where that is the norm. Uh-huh. Because we have, you know, made it so hard to do things the other way. And some areas, like I can't even get my family to like use one password. All right. Never mind. You know, and Apple has lowered the barrier to entry significantly with what they've done on their devices. I mean, Android may have done the same. Google may have done the same. I don't use Android devices for that with their built-in password management. So let's not blame the victims here. Let's blame the system.
I do have to tell you guys, though, about 23andMe. I was resistant. My mom gave me a package like one for Christmas one year. And I was like, no. You know, security, privacy, blah, blah, blah. Really, it occurred to me that both of my parents are in the military. So my genetic sampling is out there anyway. So I gave in and I got a new pack, you know, because it had been a long time. So they sent me a new one. I did the thing. It came back as they couldn't read my DNA. So they sent me yet another one. And that also came back as they couldn't read my DNA. That's where I am with 23andMe, but I'm going to keep trying.
Are you saying your saliva is encrypted? Is this that what you're saying?
Yeah, my saliva is encrypted, or I just need to know that I'm human.
Let's get JJ a Turing test.
Yeah.
All right, one more news story, and then we'll get into our conversation with Rich about cloud slaw. But first, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, that's the SEC, they fined two investment firms a combined total of $400,000 for making false and misleading claims about the use of AI. The companies did not have the AI or ML capabilities that they had claimed to have in press releases, on their websites, and in social media posts. JJ, I think you and I both twigged on this because we know an industry that really loves to make lots of AI claims.
Yeah, I mean, every freaking thing that we buy now is like got the AI rubber stamp on it. It's the same crap we were buying yesterday. We've got, you know, AI toaster ovens and refrigerators and ML driven, you know, whatever, fill in the blanks, you know, in the cybersecurity space, networking space, definitely in the cloud services and automation space, everything has an AI label on it with no real, from a marketing perspective, no real guards around when it's appropriate to use that.
We say the same thing about actually keeping organizations secure, and we don't do that either. So why stop there?
Shot through the heart.
Obviously, the SEC here is going after two financial services companies, but the SEC's remit is any publicly traded organization. So I think it is a heads up for folks in the IT and security spaces. You know, maybe go have a conversation with your marketing department.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Although I have seen quite a few of the vendors starting to layer on actual AI pieces, whether or not it offers value. For example, using LLM natural language queries for, right. Like we have an internal thing at my day job at Firemon, where not my product, but one of our other products, they're not going to release it to customers. We're not talking about it publicly like at all, but they've been playing with it internally to do some pretty interesting things around that. But it takes time to do those things well. But again, you have to have AI listed on something. I just recently was on a project where yesterday I ripped my hair out and I sent very angry emails, not a Firemon, to another organization I was doing some stuff with, because it was so clear they had taken something I had done and like AI'd it and it made it objectively worse, including introduction of factual errors. And I'm like, look, I use AI tools every single day now. You just got to know when to use them and where to use them and what the value out of it is. And we went through the same thing with cloud. I don't see any difference here.
Well, I think one interesting takeaway with this is that, you know, the AI washing and the overuse of it in marketing materials. But what do you think are going to be the terms, like the technology terms or technologies that are going to be more scrutinized in this type of marketing use?
We're already seeing security claims becoming more scrutinized to some degree, I think. And obviously use of AI, that's a blip. I mean, it really is. And in not that AI is a blip, I think these particular cases are a bit of a blip. You know, anytime you're making false claims, what's going to be focused on, or you're not delivering, you know, value. So I'm not sure what else is out there really. I mean, they're, you know, outside of the traditional core security and privacy.
But automating static policies a little faster than we did yesterday does not make it AI.
No, I mean, yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of not AI, let's talk a little bit about cloud slaw.
Yay.
So I was really excited when I saw this come out. And for those of you that don't know Rich well yet or haven't seen his work, long-term involvement with the Cloud Security Alliance and writing the body of knowledge and the training related to that. And always a huge proponent of community-driven efforts, free training, free resources through Securosis and other outlets and partnerships. It did not surprise me when I saw you already up to your eyeballs in your day job managing a product line and then coming in and doing something like this. But it seems like it's really gotten you very invigorated. So just go ahead and give us a little introduction about what Cloud Slaw is, why you started it, who its intended audience is. All that jazz.
Yeah, I had a weird moment. It was last year. I can't even remember when. And it had been kind of brewing for a while where I realized that a large portion of my career has been focused around, particularly when I started Securosis over 15 years ago, was being able to make a living giving away free content. I know that sounds silly, but I came up with a business model that allowed me to release free research and very independent and content focused. And I was still able to have a comfortable lifestyle with my family around that. I started realizing I had really, like, starting about a year or two before COVID, gone so deep into delivering on projects and doing the startup thing both at the same time that I kind of like disappeared and became very focused on those aspects. And so I was trying to come up with an idea of like doing something fun and interesting that was going to get me creatively inspired again, because I've always loved that interaction with the community and ways to give away for something for free. And as you mentioned, I do a lot of the training pieces, and it got in my head, like newsletters. Newsletters are like the big thing right now. Everybody's doing newsletters. I've already done the podcast thing. I mean, Mark McKay and Zach Lanier and I Lene and I, we like did that for years. What could be different? And then I'm like, well, I've got all these like training things and it's great to run a 2-day or a 4-day course, but what if I could like really change the floor of security and what it takes to get into cloud security specifically, where I didn't have a deadline. I didn't have an agenda. It didn't have to align with someone else's common body of knowledge. And that kind of gave me the idea and I was thinking about it. And then I was like in the shower and it like hit me. I'm like, all right, I could do a lab. Like I could do a newsletter, a security lab a week, cloud security. I like, once the name hit, Cloud Slaw, how can I not do this thing? And I got so excited and it took me months of planning to pull it off and bouncing the idea off of people. Matt Johansson was a huge help because he's been doing the newsletter bit, figuring out the technology sides of how do I do this, figuring out the lab structure sides, the mechanics of how I'm going to actually pull this off, because there's a lot that goes into it. And that's where the idea came from. In the end, what really appealed to me, one, it had a catchy name that was fun. And then I did a catchy logo, which was fun. I actually have the opportunity here to start somebody with zero security knowledge and zero cloud knowledge and build them up from nothing all the way to being able to be functional and actually contribute as a security or as another professional contributing to security. That part's exciting.
Yeah, let's talk about that. How was this course envisioned in terms of what you were going to cover and what level you were going to set it at?
It's not envisioned as like a full big picture. So my idea is Cloud Slaw, the main one itself, is we'll go indefinitely. Who knows what the end will be. But my idea is if I start with the most basic fundamentals of what you need to do for cloud security, and we build out an enterprise scale, basically lab environment. And everything we're going to do in there is designed to start from creating your first Amazon account all the way to, you know, in a year, we'll probably be on some pretty advanced topics. I thought every lab needs to be no more than 30 minutes. So I target 15 to 30 minutes and every lab is broken up into a lesson and a lab. And the lesson's like, you know, 5 minutes of reading on the principles. And then the lab is demonstrating those principles. So for example, with IAM, we started, which is one of the early ones you have to cover because that's huge. I actually start with what is an identity? What is an identifier? What is an entity? And the first lesson is just, I think, those three. And then we make our first IAM user and kind of go through. And then the next one, we get into attributes. And then we had another lesson that got into personas. And so I'm introducing really foundational security concepts of IAM. And now we're on some federation stuff right now with identity providers and relying parties. And how, like with AWS, you can switch your persona, which is, you know, role switching and all those pieces, and getting into those level of topics, but starting it really at that. Okay, I actually did a promotional thing through a non-security site, Daring Fireball, it's Apple stuff and John Gruber Tech.
Yeah.
And I basically was like, you need to know the difference between an API and an IPA, but that's about it. Like, you have to have some baseline technical knowledge.
I was just getting ready to ask you, like, how tall do you have to be to ride this ride? Because I just looked back in my folder and it was 2016. I came and took the CCSK at Black Hat with you.
Oh, yeah.
Because I came from the networking background. You know, I understand all of the networking components of it. I had not had to really manage virtualized environments, which I think a lot of the cloud foundational knowledge kind of builds on that. So not like I was lost. I made it through everything, but not with like my head fully wrapped around what I was doing, why I was doing it, et cetera, et cetera. So is this really like handholding from the beginning for those of us that didn't? Okay.
Absolutely. Because it's to address some of the issues. So CCSK to me is a pretty basic class, but even experienced security professionals who haven't worked in that realm, there can still be a lot. So we're redoing CCSK right now. I'm doing a bunch. Mike Rothman and I are rewriting the whole thing from scratch. And, you know, for that, I've got a CBK and I have 2 days to cover everything with Lectern Labs. We're building it where somebody should have about 2 years experience is the level what CCSK is built on. With Cloud Slaw, I really am just assuming you know technology. And that's why I advertised on Daring Fireball. Now, John had a gap in sponsorship and he's a friend and I got a deal on it. Still was not cheap, but now I can spread this out to a wider audience of people. So yeah. I really want this to be the zero to hero. And I've done some cool tech things to make it work that way. By the same token, at some point, I need to make money off of it. Let's be real. I don't feel guilty if I'm giving away high quality free content about making money. And some of that will be sponsorship, but I do anticipate having like you know, more focused private classes, like my incident response one where there's pre-built lab environment or whatever. Like there's a lot that can be done with this conceptually, but this is the loss leader. This is the, like, let's give something to the community piece. And I don't feel guilty about that part of at all. I hope I can make a difference, to be blunt.
How long have you been doing this? How many labs are out there?
Lab 15 went out. Wait, what's today?
Today is the 21st of March.
I know. What day of the week, though?
It is a Thursday.
It's Thursday. Do you know where your children are?
Yeah, I got to go look because the Lab 15 was supposed to go out today and I did not see that. I got to see if I made a mistake on that. Anyway, I'll deal with that after this call. But yeah, so Lab 15 today.
If people are doing it once a week, like you're getting into 3 and 4 months in of content at this point.
Yeah. And when you start with lab one. So if you sign up today, you start at the first lab. It is not real time. It is actually, you get the labs in sequence. Now, if you go to the website, you get them right away. And this is one of the things that took me a bit to get figured out and had to do with the platform that I was using to go ahead and do this. But according to this, the email went out, but I didn't get my email. That's funny.
So there are two ways to get this. I can just sign up and I get a lab delivered to my inbox, or I can go to the website and just see all the labs that have been posted to date.
Yeah, there's really kind of four channels for how it works. So there's what I call the sequence, which is the you sign up for the newsletter, you get it once a week, and that's delivered in the order the labs were built. And then over time, I can actually go back. Like if something gets dated, I can individually fix the labs. Mm-hmm. Number two is the blog post on the website. So those all appear on the website. And those also are in an RSS feed. So that's number three is the RSS feed part of it. And then number four is the YouTube channel, which is the least used of all of them. So I almost wonder why I spend so much time on the videos. But the way I build them, video is a key part of that. So I always have the video. So you've got the written blog post, the written website, RSS feed, and YouTube are the four kind of ways to allow people to consume it the way they want to consume it.
I can just imagine our listeners pulling their own hair out saying, what's the website? So I'm just going to read out here and we'll say it again at the end, but it's slaw.securiosis.com, yes?
Yeah, Securiosis, slaw.securiosis.com.
And Securiosis is S-E-C-U-R-O-S-I-S. But again, we'll have that link in the show notes.
JJ, you looked like you were about to jump in on something else.
I was going to say I recently signed up and it's RSA prep time. So as soon as I get through RSA prep time, my hope is setting, you know, because 15 to 30 minutes a week is totally doable, no matter how busy you think you are, you know, get off Facebook for a few minutes, people. So I'm interested to tackle this. I did not know there was a YouTube channel. I'm going to go find that as well.
Yeah. So are these just videos that I watch, or is there actually a lab component that I can do something as well?
They're full walkthroughs. One of the things, because I've been teaching for so long, is there's a couple of things I try to do to lower the barrier to entry. First is lots and lots of screenshots, like step-by-step screenshots. Mm-hmm. And then over time, I start fading out. So I don't screenshot every little piece of it. Like once we've done something enough time, like logging into the portal, I don't give you the screenshots of how to log in, but I do for like the first 3 or 4 laps. Mm-hmm. And then navigating the AWS console to find a service. Like once I've done that 8-10 times, there's no reason for me to keep doing that. So I kind of fade those out. And that's important because even people who are smart, if you're unfamiliar with a platform and where things are, you need to, like, having all of those screenshots. That was Matt Johansson's response when I sent him the first one in preview. He's like, holy crap, I had no idea this was the depth you were going into. The video is then the walkthrough to support that. That is, I think, the combination. So the video there is a reference, but I do also do the lecture pieces in the video. So I do combine that, the lecture and the lab in the video, just as the blog post and the newsletter, lecture and lab.
So are you anticipating that people will go and create an account in the cloud and sort of follow along and do what you're doing, use that as a guide?
This is what it's built for. It is absolutely made to be hands-on. Every week is a hands-on lab. The exception is occasionally I will drop in like a breather to allow people to catch up, where I talk about some principles and say, double check these things. But I've only done one of those out of the 15 so far. So I plan on doing those probably every, you know, 2 to 3 months.
Okay. So I can consume these for free, but there is probably, I guess, a small cost on my end because I will have to go set up an account. And are we talking about AWS here?
Yeah. So this is on AWS. I may have somebody who's going to be doing Azure for me soon. Mm-hmm. So it would be a whole separate sequence, probably not weekly. It is very difficult to do this on a weekly basis. I'm sure I'll crack at some point. I have safeties in there. If I don't get something posted, that it will, like, it'll delay. And so I don't miss out, like if I get hit by a car or something. And I would anticipate, my goal is to have a handful of public ones that are all free and in public, as I have, you know, friends of ours who are willing to build their trainings, but then also private ones as well. And I don't know how that's going to be delivered, who it's going to be for. Those are all things to be worked out. But right now it's very much focused on the free public. Hopefully at some point I'll get some sponsors.
So the idea is that, hey, folks, go set up an AWS account and then follow along with Rich as we go through these security concepts.
Anything that's going to cost anything that could be material to somebody, and by material, I mean more than a few bucks a month. Mm-hmm. I'm using infrastructure as code so they can build that part out and then tear it out at the end of the lab. And I haven't had to do too much of that yet because we're still like really going slow. We are absolutely, I'm following the processes. If you're building out a massive enterprise scale organization, so like this week, we set up, and the lab was create 2 new accounts, one for your security logs and one for IAM, and then create 8 more organizational units. So that are going to be things that we're not even going to use for a year or two, like your exceptions OU, your nursery OU, when we start building account factory, like all of these things that are going to come, but we're doing it in the order to really have that strong foundation. Anything that's going to cost a lot of money is going to be handled differently. And I'm going to use infrastructure as code and I'm going to warn people.
Let's pause for just a moment to tell you about Human Infrastructure and Packet Capture, 2 weekly Packet Pushers newsletters you can subscribe to for free. Human Infrastructure delivers informative technical blogs, links to tech resources and tools, plus IT news stories and new product announcements, all with commentary by the Packet Pushers. There's also Packet Capture, a weekly digest of everything the Packet Pushers have published over the past 7 days, including podcasts, blogs, and YouTube videos. It's an easy way to find the episodes and content you want. Sign up for one or both for free at packetpushers.net/newsletters. We don't sell or share your email address with anyone. It's just between us.
That's good to know. I do remember trying to untangle that after the CCSK training. It took me, it wasn't expensive, but you know, it took me a few weeks. That was a long time ago when Amazon did not have good billing portal control and reporting. So that was a mess. But no, that is fantastic to know that you're even considering doing stuff on Azure, because that's its own can of worms for sure. That's very interesting to me.
Me too, because I've done a lot in Azure, but I'm working with somebody who's done a lot more. And I'm kind of looking forward because it's going to give me an excuse as well to go from, I mean, I have pretty solid Azure skills, but like I'd love to be closer to where I am with AWS. And even within AWS, it's forcing me to at times delve deeper into certain technologies that I've used a particular way, or in some cases haven't used at all because I have alternative ways that I solve those problems. But then now I've got to really dig in because I have to understand at a greater or later level of depth to be able to teach it at the level that I'm trying to teach it and to design the hands-on labs.
So back into the whole kind of labs and walking through, I think the way you've described it, because I haven't started in labs yet, I didn't really realize this, but starting it like you would an enterprise deployment is just phenomenal. There's really not a lot out there across any type of right network and infrastructure configuration training. It's very product specific and it's very task specific. So I'm kind of curious, you know, you have years and years, over a decade now of, you know, consulting in the space, training in the space. Are there kind of some common, you know, hiccups or mistakes, architecture errors that you see that is part of what drove you to develop the specific training you're developing?
Biggest thing that drove me to the training is there's become a barrier to entry in security overall, and especially cloud security. And I really wanted to try and reduce that barrier to entry. So I have people, honestly, going back to my paramedic thing, like I'm on, you know, paramedic Reddit, and people like, how do I get into other jobs or other careers? And people ask me how I got started in cybersecurity. Will Bengtson just wrote a book about that. Sorry, I forget his co-author, and I contributed to that one. The Security Path is the name of that. And it's hard. Like, if you think back to how we all got started in security, Drew, I don't know your background. I know JJ's. I know mine. That's not replicable. And if we look at the educational and people running around and doing, let's be honest, many of the security certifications are not really setting someone up, or they have to be run in a compressed time frame, or they're very expensive. So that was a really big design decision for me, was could I democratize this more, open it up to a wider range, and design the labs to be able to do that, but also do it with an enterprise perspective, because I can't do that in CCSK. I have 2 days and a limited number of labs. In my advanced cloud security class, I can build out part of what we're doing in these, but we can't take the time. I can't take the 20, 30 minutes to build out a bunch of OUs that we're not going to use in the class because the class is, you know, 3 days. Now I get to do whatever the heck I want to take as long as I want. And even to the point of where there's a guy, Chris Ferris, I'm good friends with, we're presenting together at RSA. I mean, he's one of the top-notch cloud security experts out there. He's literally been designated a security hero by AWS. I am a new community builder, so I'm a lowly builder. He's the hero. And I was talking with him about some of this and about accelerating some stuff, and he goes, nope. He's like, people need to stick with the low and slow. This is the foundational stuff that's really going to matter. Nobody else has this opportunity. You can't even do this in a five-day SANS class.
So you said the magic word certification. I assume this program you've developed does not have a cert attached to it, but would I still maybe find it helpful if I am looking at certifications in other areas of cloud security? Or you think this is just more like get your fundamental knowledge and don't worry about the cert?
We're talking about something in flight here, right? But where would you see somebody getting on this train through CloudSlaw, carrying through for a bit, when they want to take the next step, what is that training and certification path for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a cutover point here because I talk, obviously, I do a lot with the Cloud Security Alliance, and I'm very vested in the success of that organization. And they're a true nonprofit. It's not like, I'm not going to name names. We know other kind of training-ish places are not nonprofits. So that is the next logical step, be to go to, if you want a certificate, to go to CSA, and that would start getting you those pieces. There's obviously other orgs, SANS, ISC Squared, they have theirs as well, if you think you need some of that for your job employment. That's my plan, is also potentially, you know, maybe I'm able to convert some of this over and turn it into something more at CSA, for example, down the road. But I think that's a clear path because you'll see a lot of very similar concepts because I write both. But CCSK is designed for that, you know, kind of 2-year professional and covers a wide swath of stuff that's different. This is very hands-on and one, at least right now, one cloud provider focused. Although the requirement I put in, like for the Azure one, is I just asked, as you're building this, let's make sure the core concepts line up, even though they're implemented differently on both platforms. Like, let's make sure we're covering the fundamentals of identity for that audience that may not be reading my Amazon-focused version.
Do the vendors have anything that you deem to be like, don't miss education or training directly from them?
No, I think you need to get training from them on, you know, how their products work if you're using those in your organization. One of the things I'm going to do is, I'm looking at doing is a special kind of lab called an optional lab, where if a vendor's willing to offer a free version of their product for like a 30-day trial, and if they're willing to accept anonymous emails like Gmails and stuff, and well, you know, they're willing to pay me, we could build a lab that allows somebody to get exposure to those commercial products. Because, I mean, I'm clearly not anti-vendor because I work at one for big chunk of what I do, but I also think it's legitimate. These are tools you'll use in the enterprise. So at some point, I'll actually probably start seeking them out because it's important to know how those things integrate. You're not going to just use all Amazon stuff. I do plan on integrating things like that as well as open source tooling in kind of the educational side, where it's got to have that educational component. It can't just be a pure marketing thing.
Do you have an end goal in mind for Slaw?
I really don't. We'll see how long I can keep it going. We'll
save the world one cloud at a time.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to be able to literally produce a lab a week for the rest of my life. I mean, that's not going to happen. But I don't have an end plan. I just, right now, I'm building it up. I'm excited about it. It is relentless. You know, it takes me 4 to 6 hours per lab for a 15 to 30 minute lab. Yep. And that part's a little tough, but I'll keep it going. I offered somebody, hey, you can come in and do a guest instructor spot. I emailed someone I know who teaches professionally. So there's options maybe to get a little of that weight off my back. I would love to have this just maintained and open and continued for many years to come. I don't know when it would stop. And then I could potentially expand the concept in other areas, as I, you know, have already talked about.
For any one of the labs, because they do have detailed walkthroughs with screenshots, et cetera, based on how quickly the platform changes or how slowly, because I don't know, how long do you think it would be before you'd have to go back and, let's say, re-record aspects of the first labs you did?
You know, that's a great question. And I never know, because having maintained labs on Amazon and on Azure, we have both for, I think, about 10 years now, maybe more, that we've done that. It's been over 10 years. Amazon will often make changes in surges. So they'll start rolling out like a new UX concept. And when they start doing that, it's very messy because then things will roll over in a matter of months. When they're in a stable period, like right now, they've been pretty stable. It should be pretty good. When they make service changes, that can be, you know, a big factor as well. And I'll have to go back and redo them. My fear is when the library gets big. Right now, that's not horrible for me to go back. For example, I made a mistake in one of the labs, so I had to go back and fix that mistake. And it wasn't too bad. It was less time than building it in the first place. When they make a more fundamental changes, I'm going to have to deal with those. And so the question becomes, how far back do I go? And I'll deal with that when I come to it. But I think hopefully that shouldn't be too horrible for me.
And maybe you have an intern by then.
Yeah, it would be great to have something, even somebody just to go through and find those and identify what needs to be fixed. And then we can kind of walk through. I would love to grow this out. Look, it's not a business. I have lost many thousands of dollars at this point building this. I think I'm like $7,000+ in the hole, probably, just to be completely honest on it. Oh. But, you know, at some point that'll change.
Well, a labor of love. And that's why one of the things I looked so interesting, and so many people come to me and they say, hey, I want to get started. I'm really interested in the cloud aspect of cybersecurity. And I'd really like to get into a path like that. And, you know, I ask and I look. For a lot of these people, they're either coming out of college or they're shifting careers from another track in technology or just another career field altogether, not in technology at all. And it's hard because I don't work in that space deeply enough to know. Drew and I can probably look at the list of, you know, Cisco and Aruba and Juniper training and cert and tell you which one's going to be your best entry point in. But when it comes to a lot of the cloud stuff, there's the vendor stuff, there's the CSA stuff, there's just stuff everywhere. And you don't really know which ones are foundational and which ones are going to be more advanced and which ones are going to cost $8,000 for a class that these people don't have, right? So I think this is fantastic. And I thought this would be a great way to kind of share with our broader audience because the packet protector ecosystem of networking is both cloud and on-prem. And so the audience here, everybody listening, you know, straddles that to different degrees. So we thought this would be an awesome audience. And I'm sure probably people want to know how they can get signed up and get going with it. So just kind of tying this up in a little bow, because I want to say cloud slaw one more time, being a Southern North Carolina girl, we love our slaw and we love our barbecue. So I was really happy when I saw that. It did make me hungry. It's Securosis. We'll put the links, Securosis. And it's at the subdomain, just slaw, SLAW. So slaw.securosis.com. And there's a lot of other stuff. So Rich, I know one of the things I mentioned before we started recording here is you are always and have always been involved in so many different things that are great for the community and great opportunities. You know, Firemon's doing some cool stuff. I'd love to dig in with you and them on more. The cloud maturity model that was jointly put out by you guys, Securosis, Cloud Security Alliance, and IONS is available with some additional resources, and that's just freely available. So there's a lot of other stuff I would love to bring you back and talk through if you can squeeze in the time in between all of the different slaw labs.
Obviously, I would love to do that. So yeah, labs are definitely taking up my weekends, my evenings, that's for sure.
Well, here's the big question. Do you have your kids helping you with your labs yet?
No, I don't. Oh my God, they're so busy. Gymnastics and dance and school and scouts and like our lives are ridiculously overscheduled right now. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Track, my oldest daughter is on the track team now. It's just, oh my God, there's so much going on.
Well, definitely a tip of the hat then for being able to find time to create free labs for folks.
I got excited about this. It's very energizing. I enjoy doing it, and especially because they're hands-on. So it's all like hands-on keyboard stuff as I'm building the labs. God, I have spent so much time. I haven't written a single slide for this. Like there's no presentations. There's no whatever. It's just, all right, let me come up with a lecture. I'll do a live whiteboard. I record everything as the video, and then I screenshot off the video to do the step-by-step and kind of knock it all out. So it's a lot of fun.
Since everybody's listening to this, because we don't do a lot of the video stuff, I just want to point out that if you couldn't tell it in his voice, when Rich said, I haven't had to do any slides, I swear he just had this ear to ear, like Cheshire cat grin.
Yep.
Hey, let me ask this, wrapping up them too. Aside from, you know, like the email and blog and everything, is there a place where people are coalescing to discuss, like the people that are consuming your labs at this point, like on Slack or Discord or anything?
Yeah, not yet. I've thought about setting something up for that. There is a community, a cloud security Slack that a lot of us are in, and we got a channel set up for that. Very low traffic in that channel. I've been debating, do I do a Discord or, you know, Slack or something along those lines? I need to get a little further along with stuff and get some of my mechanics and those pieces worked out before I can commit to that. People email me all the time, though. I got one today asking about something. I'm like, unfortunately, my answer is going to be, nope, we're not doing a lab on WAF or, you know, probably 9 to 18 months. We're still focused on getting your org structure and service control policies and stuff. We'll get there, but it's going to be a while down the road. So yeah, I get a lot of emails about it right now.
I guess we're at the end of our time here. Rich, any final thoughts before we wrap?
No, I just want to thank the people who have been really supportive as I've gone through this. I've mentioned Clint Dibbler and Matt Johansson and others have, you know, kind of really been helping me refine this idea. IONS, where JJ and I also do work, has been really supportive in the Cloud Security Alliance. This was a big swing. It was a huge guess work, but I'm up to, I'll probably crack 2,500 subscribers this week. And like in 3.5 months, it's just phenomenal. It gives me energy. And keep the feedback coming, people. And if people want to build a community about it, I'm all for supporting that.
All right, one more time, sla.securosis.com.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Rich, for joining us. We really appreciate it and appreciate the work you're doing, and I hope folks go check that out. And as always, thank you, the listeners, for listening to another episode of Packet Protector. You can find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want more nerdy goodness on networking, wireless, cloud, network automation, and more, you can find it all at packetpushers.net. We've got thousands of hours of free technical content for your listening pleasure.